Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 3 lines from the top of Kuf Lamed Tes. Before beginning the Gemara, let us take advantage of one of the features of our Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of the Gemara marking system, the Shas that you see on your screen. You will notice in the outside margin there is a Nosei Mivneh heading. We feature from time to time, when necessary, topic headings and structural notes. Topic headings entitled Nosei and structural notes entitled Mivneh. At times we combine the two into one note, as we do over here. In the Gemara text itself, you will notice a series of double underlines. These are explained under the Nosei Mivneh heading. We have written on the outside margin, Shlavim, stages, Lahazbir, to explain, Eich, Hakdoshas Ha'oif Poter Mishiluach. We had learned in the Mishnah that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, of sending away the mother before taking the offspring, the eggs or the chicks, in the nest, will not apply in the case of something, of birds that have been sanctified. What we want to understand in our Gemara is, what does the Mishnah intend when it says that Shiluach HaKein does not apply to Mukdashim. We've also included in our Gemara text, you'll notice to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a shin that is encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. This is a long question. It's a she'ela. We're trying to understand, how is it that something that is Mukdash is potter from Shiluach HaKein? This will take a number of lines of the Gemara after raising numerous suggestions and rejections of those suggestions till we get to the answer as to how it is that Hekdesh exempts from, sanctification exempts from Shiluach HaKein. So let us now turn to the Gemara. Hani Mukdashim Hechi Domi. We are looking for the exemption as a result of the as a result of something being sanctified. If you are to think that the person had a nest in his house and he dedicated it to the Beis HaMikdash, well, was he chayev in the first place? Even with it out being sanctified, there would have been an exemption. The Pasuk says, Ki kore kansipor. Prat lemezumon. The pasuk says, when you chance upon a nest, this is to the exclusion of something that is at your disposal. Mezumon, something that is available at your any ready need. Hence, something that's in one's house, even without the sanctification factor, would be exempt, as it does not conform to the dictate of the pasuk, which says ki kore, when you chance upon, not, which is to the exclusion of something that is in your house. Elo, rather, what might be the case of Hekdesh that exempts? The Chozer came to Alma of Akdeshe. You happen to see a nest out there in the wilds, and you dedicated it, you sanctified it. Well, as far as that's concerned, that's also not going to fulfill our standard or our what we are seeking. Umi Kadosh, would sanctification even take hold in such a case? Once again, we are looking for a case where something that was sanctified is, as a result of the sanctification, becomes exempt. But here, it doesn't. The sanctification doesn't even take hold. The pasuk says, in the context of Hekdesh, it says, Ish ki yagdish es beiso kodesh, omar rachmona. When a person dedicates his house to the Beis HaMikdash. And we learn from this, ma beiso birshu. So just like one's house is something that is in his control, af kol birshu, so too, anything that is in his control is subject to hekdesh, as opposed to something in the wilds that you just happen to note and you decide to dedicate it, the dedication, the sanctification doesn't even take hold, because it's not like beiso that is featured in this pasuk. Ela, so what is once again the case of hekdesh that exempts? Da'agbeinu lefrechim vakdishinu v'hoder hadrinu. Well, it may be a case where he came up upon a nest, he picked up the efrechim, and by picking them up, as he picks them up, he dedicates them to the by picking them up, he becomes the owner of it, so to speak, so it's like beiso in that sense, and then he after picking them up, he then dedicates them. And after that, the mother comes back. So we want to say that in that case, as a result of the as a result of his dedicating them, as a result of his being makdish the efreichim, the return of the mother will not generate the mitzvah of shiluach hakein anymore. The Gemara asks, "Well, hi, afilu b'chulin ami lo mechayev." That particular scenario where he picked up the birds and thereby acquired them would have been exempt even without the hekdesh factor. Even in the case of chulin, non-hekdesh, the mundane and the common case, that would have been exempt. The Tana, the Snan, there is the Mishnah teaches us, Notal es habonim v'chziron lakein. If a person picked up the offspring and then put them back in the nest, and then the mother bird came back, there is exemption from the mitzvah of shiluach hakein. So what you see from this source is that by the mere picking up of the birds, that makes it yours and no longer conforms to the intent of the pasuk in which shiluach hakein should apply. So once again, we have not found a case where the sanctification is the cause of the exemption. Ela, the agbola ein rakdasha. Here's a case where he picks up the mother and sanctifies the mother, the hodra, and then puts her down. So we want to say that would be the case of hekdesh being the exemption. So what are we describing here? A person comes across a nest, he picks up the mother and sanctifies her and puts her down, and that thereby the sanctification causes exemption. The Gemara rejects this and says, how can you say that? The initial obligation that set in when he came across this particular nest, before he picked up the mother, he became bound to fulfill, he became obligated to fulfill the mitzvah of shiluach. So once the obligation of shiluach sets in, the subsequent sanctification cannot come and undo the obligation that he has to send her away. The Sanya, we will now feature a source, although it's not in the topic of Shiluach HaKein, it will illustrate this idea that once a chiyuv to perform a mitzvah sets in, the fact that you subsequently sanctify it, that does not absolve one from the need to fulfill the initial obligation. The source says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Yosef Omer, Hikdish Chayo v'achar kach shochta. If a person dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, a Chayo, an undomesticated kosher variety animal, which in general, without the issue of dedication, Chayos, like birds, require the covering of the blood upon their being slaughtered. So here we describe someone who was Makdish Chayo and then slaughtered it, Potter Milachasos. He is exempt from doing the blood covering Kisui Adam, and that's because this Shechita should not have taken place. It was something that he dedicated. He had no right to then slaughter it. So as a result of it being an improper Shechita, so the Chiyuv of Kisui Adam, the obligation of covering the blood, does not set in. Now, Shochta V'achaka Chiktisha, if, however, he slaughtered the animal first, which would generate the obligation to do Kisui Adam because he slaughtered his own Chaya, the Achakach Hikdisha, and then he dedicated it. Chayov lechasos. He is obligated to do the kisui adam. The obligation to do kisui adam set in at the point of the slaughtering prior to the sanctification. Shikvar nischayev bekisui koidem shiov lidei hekdesh. He was already bound, obligated to do the kisui before it came to the point of sanctification. Now, with that in mind, we say the same thing with regard to shiluah hakein. As soon as he chanced upon the nest, he became obligated. The subsequent sanctification isn't going to undo that obligation. So we still don't have an answer to the issue of how does sanctification in the case of Shiluach HaKein exempt one from Shiluach HaKein. You'll notice now that we have come to the end of the long question, because now we're about to find answers, and this is explained in our outside margin under the heading Nosei, and we've indicated Hemshech, which means this is a continuation of the topic we have already started, and the Mivneh, the structural note, combined into one note. You notice the diamond is featured. These are Tshuvos Lehanal, answers to that which was raised as a question before. We will be dealing with a machloikas b'koichoi shel merid ha'of. We will see a controversy arising in the Gemara concerning a bird that one once had owned, and the bird then flew away from the owner. It's called merid, literally rebelled. What is the strength of that merid, of that rebellion, of that escape of the bird? Lahafkia kedushas bedek habayis. If something was sanctified for the temple repair fund, in other words, not as a sacrifice on the mizbeach, on the altar, but rather a dedication to the general treasury of the Beis Hamikdash. Let us say someone had made a dedication to the general treasury, which is called Kedushas Domim, a Kedusha, a sanctification upon value, a value sanctification. What happens in the case that an item that was dedicated to the Bedek HaBayis, if that item escaped, does that undo the sanctification? And if the sanctification is undone, well, in the case of Shiluach HaKein, then it would be the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein would become reinstated, or would be able to take hold. Let us now see the Gemara. Rav Omar, the Mishnah that says that Shiluach HaKein is potter b'mukdashim is b'makdish peiros shoivchoi umordo. The case involves where a person had dedicated the young birds in the nest as a korban for the mizbeach, which is called kotche mizbeach. Let us glance at the Rashi. B'maktish peros shovcho gozolos. These are chicks shovcho of his bird coop lemizbeach. He dedicated the chicks in his bird coop to the altar le'olas nedova as an ola, a voluntary ola offering. V'acharkach kishigodlu oisun peros, when these chicks got older, mordu v'yotzu, they escaped. V'konunu b'mokom achir, and made a nest somewhere else. The meikora kiakdishinu. Initially, when he made the sanctification, the day havu, they were his v'chal hekdesh olayu, and the sanctification takes hold v'hashta demotzon. And now that he finds them out there in the wilds, lav mizumanhu, it's no longer something that is at his disposal. He found it out in the wilds. V'havu chulin havu mechayvi. Had these birds been common birds, as opposed to those originally sanctified, he would have been obligated. However, since he found the rebellious birds that he knew he could identify as having once been sanctified, as a result of that sanctification, they are exempt. Namely, even though on the objective circumstances as they are now, he would have been obligated had they been chulin, but as a result of his having sanctified them, they are exempt from shiluach hakein. The high denoka peris v'lomar makdishav chatzmo. The reason that the Gemara uses the expression peiros shovcho and simply not shovcho, the bird coop, the expression peros indicates something that's like the fruit of, something young, an offspring of. The yoinim einam ruyim elo kishen ktanim. Yoinim, type birds, it's a type of bird, they're not fit for the altar unless they are still young. When they reach a certain stage of development, they become unfit for the altar. The Rav lo omar le milsei elo bekotshe mizbech. Rav's teaching applies only to kotshe mizbech. In other words, only because it has this high level of sanctity, the subsequent rebellion does not undo the sanctity, and hence there is exemption, but only in the case of kotshe mizbech. However, as far as Rav is concerned, if the initial dedication had been for kotshe bedek habayis, a dedication to the temple repair fund, to the temple treasury, the rebellion of the birds, the escape of the birds would have undone that kedushas domim, and he would have been obligated, there would have been an obligation upon his finding the birds to mekayim, to fulfill shiluach hakein. The next opinion though, Shmuel Amar b'matish tarnagolto leberek habayis. Shmuel talks about one dedicating a chicken to the temple repair fund. A chicken is not something that's fit for the mizbeach, but one could dedicate a chicken to the temple treasury. And then this bird, this chicken, ran away. It flew away. It escaped. It was Morda. Bishlama Shmuel, and so what are we saying? Let's go over Shmuel's point before going on into Gemara. Shmuel is telling us that even something who received a lower, even something like this case of the chicken dedicated to the treasury, which receives a kedushas domim, a lower level sanctity, its subsequent escape does not undo that sanctity, and hence there is no mitzvah of shiluach hakein, because the mitzvah of shiluach hakein indicates one sending a bird away and then taking the chicks or the eggs for oneself. Here, since the sanctity remains, he wouldn't be able to take it for himself, and hence there is an exemption. The main point being that according to Shmuel, the mered, the fact that it ran away, it fluttered away, and left his control, does not undo the kedushas domim that it has. And as a result of it having this kedusha status, this holy status, even though it was dedicated to a lower level status, the mere temple treasury as opposed to the altar, it still does not become undone, and the exemption remains. Bishlamo Shmuel Omar Karav, we can understand that Shmuel did not adopt Rav's approach. The Komoikim law, Bekotshe Berek Habayis. Shmuel established the exemption of Hekdish to include even Kotshe Berek Habayis. Even this lower level sanctity remains even though the bird escaped. So Shmuel was, what was Shmuel accomplishing? He was accomplishing by telling us a greater point of a greater chiddush, a greater point of novelty of something that I wouldn't have thought of on my own. So I understand why Shmuel taught what he taught. Elo Rav, my time alo Omar k'Shmuel. But Rav, the question here is, why did Rav not say like Shmuel? Why did Rav limit the case to the case of kotshe mizbeach? Omar loch Rav. Rav will answer. Davka kopatri mishloch hakein kagon peros shovcho the kotshe mizbeach ninhu. Rav says that this idea of hekdish preventing the obligation of shiluach hakein from taking hold applies only where the original sanctification was an altar sanctification. The kevah the kodesh kedushas aguf, since they absorbed an inherent sanctity, namely the bird itself, as opposed to its mere value, but the bird itself would be offered on the altar. Lo poka kedushasayu minayhu, the sanctity that they were instilled with initially does not become void. Avol b'matish tarnigoto berek habayis, the lav kodshe mizbeach, the kedushas domim ba'alma hu. However, when it comes to a dedication to the temple treasury, which is not an altar level, an altar sanctification, it's a mere value sanctification, where eventually the temple treasury would take the item that was sanctified and sell it and use the money of it. Kevon de Marda, once it rebels, that very item that was sanctified as Kedushas Domen, Poka Kedushas Sayu v'chayeves b'shiluach. The sanctification that was instilled upon it, it becomes, is voided, and therefore, when he chances upon this item, this bird that was initially instilled with a Kedushas Domim, and he finds it after it rebelled, he will be obligated to fulfill Shiluach HaKein. That's as far as Rav is concerned. Ushmuel Omar, Shmuel responds and says, Kol Hecha Deise, wherever this bird is, namely, the bird that was instilled with a Kedushas Domim, a monetary, a value sanctity, wherever it is after it rebels, it doesn't matter that it rebelled. Bebe goza de Rachmona Esau. It is considered in the temple's in the temple treasury owner, under the temple treasury ownership. Dechtiv Hashem haratzim loa. The Almighty, unto the Almighty is the world and all of its contents. So that wherever the bird is, since it originally had been sanctified, it still is sanctified, even though it's not in the domain of the original person who sanctified it. But once it was sanctified, it was given over to the realm of the Almighty. And as far as the Almighty is concerned, everything is His. Everything is under His control. So the fact that it merely, that it simply rebelled, doesn't undo the sanctification that it received. V'chein Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan likewise explains the Mishnah as Shmuel did. B'makdish tarnagoto lebedek habayis u'morda. A person dedicated a chicken to the temple treasury, and it rebelled, and then he chanced upon it. There will be an exemption from Shiluach HaKein because it has a sanctity attached to it, temple sanctity, and it's not something that you would be able to take for yourself. Omar Le Rabbi Shimon Lokish, V'kevan Shemorda Pokola Kedusha Asa. Wouldn't you say that once it rebelled, the Kedusha leaves it? This, by the way, is similar to what Rav argued before, that Kedushas Domim that it may have had will become voided once it rebels, and there should be an obligation. Omar Le, so Rabbi Yochanan answers, Bebe Goza de Rachmona Esau. Dichtiv Lashem Haaretz Umloa. The bird that was instilled with a Kedushas Domim is, even though it ran away, it fluttered away, it still is in the, it's still said to be in the Almighty's control. As the Pasuk says, unto the Lord, unto the Almighty is the world and all of its contents. At this point then, we in addition to seeing the Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, and how to set up the case of Hegdish as being a reason for exemption, Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, concerning the circumstances of the Hegdish, or what type of Hegdish causes exemption, we have also learned Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish deal with the same topic, and we were able to see a parallel between Rabbi Yochanan with Shmuel and Reish Lakish with Rav. The Gemara now embarks on a long question. A difficulty is raised, and you can see the length of this by the encircled kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with the descending vertical dashed line. All of these lines constitute the question. And the question is that we seem to find a contradiction within comments of Rabbi Yochanan and within comments of Reish Lakish that they have made elsewhere. The Rami, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Yochanan. We will now raise a contradiction within two statements of Rabbi Yochanan. The Rami, the Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, and Rabbi Shimon Lakish, and likewise with regard to comments of Reish Lakish, the Itmar. We have been taught Mono ze levedek habayis. A person made a dedication of money to the temple treasury. The Nignivu oishinevdu, and they were stolen or lost. So after the person made his dedication, he set aside the funds to fulfill his dedication, but they were stolen or lost. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Chayov Bachriyusan Avshiyavo Lide Gizbor. The individual who set them aside must make good on his dedication, and he's obligated to he bears responsibility until they are brought to the hands of the treasurer of the Beis Hamikdash. Rish Lakish Omar Kohecha de Isay Bebe Gozo de Rachmona Isay. Well, you know, the person who made the dedication doesn't have to bear responsibility for those funds, because wherever they are, so even though they were stolen, so to speak, they are still in the domain of the temple fund. Dichtiv Lashem Oratzimuloa. So this comment that we just see now of Bebe Gozo de Rachmona Isay, this is something that Reish Lakish is saying. And Rabbi Yochanan is not saying that. A few lines up, you will notice that Rabbi Yochanan himself was the one that said that as a response to Reish Lakish, indicating that this concept of a Begozo de Rachmona Isay, that in the case of Kedushas Domim, or something that was dedicated to the base, to the Berek HaBayis, it is always in the under the realm of the Kedushas Berek HaBayis. So just to review that point again, prior to this long question, the concept of Bebe Gozo de Rachmona Isay was Rabbi Yochanan's point. In this Gemara, it's not Rabbi Yochanan's point, it's specifically Reish Lakish's point. So as a result of this, we now see Kasha de Reish Lakish ad Reish Lakish, Kasha de Rabbi Yochanan ad Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara response, the Reish Lakish and the Reish Lakish lo kashya. By the way, this response is only of a partial nature. Hence, our long question continues, because the Gemara is going to point out in a minute that maybe Reish Lakish can be resolved, but the problem remains with Rabbi Yochanan, and as we will see. So the Gemara says, the Reish Lakish and the Reish Lakish lo kashya. As far as what appears to be a contradiction within Reish Lakish, that doesn't have to be. Ha makami deshame merab Yochanan rabbei. The Reish Lakish above was before he heard the concept of Bei Gozo de Rachmona mentioned by Rabbi Yochanan, his teacher. Ha lebosor deshamei Rabbi Yochanan Rabbei. This second statement of Reish Lakish, where Reish Lakish is making mention of Bei Gozo de Rachmona Isay, that is after he had heard this concept from Rabbi Yochanan. So there's, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, we don't have to say there's a contradiction, but rather there's a before and after. Elo de Rabbi Yochanan, ad Rabbi Yochanan kashya. But as far as Rabbi Yochanan himself is concerned, there seems to be a contradiction. Once again, in the first, before this long question, the first appearance of Rabbi Yochanan was mentioning that items of the that were dedicated to the Kedushas Damim, even though they are not in their initial domain, because they got lost, they ran away, whatever happened, they changed their location. The change of location doesn't undo the sanctification. In this second appearance of Rabbi Yochanan, he doesn't seem to subscribe to that idea of wherever it is, it's considered already in the temple fund, and hence the person who made the dedication, after it got stolen, he has to make good on it, because his dedication hasn't been fulfilled. Had he held, like he said originally, that wherever it is, it's in the domain of the Beis HaMikdash, so then the person who set it aside, at the point he set it aside, at the point he made his dedication, he fulfilled his obligation. He doesn't have to make good on it anymore. So the Gemara answers, the Rabbi Yochanan, and the Rabbi Yochanan, nami loy kashya. There isn't a contradiction within Rabbi Yochanan. It all depends on what his original statement was. Ha de Omar olai. If he had said that this dedication to the temple treasury is upon me, then if something happens, he must make good on it. He then becomes obligated. He bears responsibility. Ha di Omar harei zu. However, if he said that I am dedicating this, not accepting personal responsibility, he simply said, he pointed to an item and he said, I'm dedicating this to the temple treasury, then if something happens, he no longer bears responsibility. If this happens to be Rabbi Yochanan's position, then michlal, we can infer the Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, who had disagreed with him, who had said that wherever it is Bebe Gozo de Rachmona, and therefore there is no obligation. So then we can infer that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish's stance is Afagav di Omar Alai lo mechayev. Even if he had said Olai, he would not be chayev because of this overwhelming concept of wherever it is, it's in the domain of the Beis Hamikdash. Well, v'hatanya, but we have learned to the contrary. In other words, by not like Reish Lakish says that even though you said Olai, you don't bear responsibility. If you use the expression Olai, you will bear responsibility to make good on it. And that's explained in the following Tanaic source. Ezu neder, ezu nedava. There are two expressions of vows that appear. In English, we might refer to a general concept of vow. However, there's something called a neder and something different that's called a nedava. Neder equals ha'omer harei olai ola. If a person says, I accept upon myself an obligation to bring an ola sacrifice, nedava is characterized by ha'omer harei zu ola. He points to an animal and he dedicates a specific animal as an ola. Uma bein neder l'nedava. What legal difference is there between one who says olai versus one who says zu? Answer. Neder, in the case of neder, which was hare olai, mesa o nignava o sha'ovda. If something happens to the animal that he intended to bring, if it dies, gets stolen, or is lost, chayov b'achriyusa, he must make good on it. He is obligated, he bears responsibility to seeing to it that it's brought as a sacrifice. And if the one that he originally had in mind is not there, so since he had said olai, he accepted upon himself an obligation, so he has to make good on that and bring another one. Nedava, however, in the case of nedava, which was hare zu, where he dedicated a specific animal as a sacrifice without accepting upon himself personal responsibility, then mesa o nignava o shavda, if it dies, gets stolen, or is lost, eino chayav b'achriyusa. He does not bear responsibility and have to make good on it. So what do we see here? That for Reish Lakish to have assumed a position that kol hecha de'isa, wherever an item is, it's considered in the domain of the Beis HaMikdash, and thereby absolving the original owner of any responsibility, even in a case of olai, that doesn't hold water. In other words, we see that is not true. Omar loch Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish responds. He says, "Hani mili kotche mizbeach de mechusra krova." This source that we learned regarding that olai involves the bearing of responsibility. That is true when the dedication was made as with regard to an altar sacrifice, a kodshei mizbeach, something dedicated with the sanctity of the altar. The mechusra krova, because it is lacking its ultimate purpose. Its ultimate purpose is to be offered on the mizbeach. So if anything happens to it prior to its being offered on the mizbeach, then the original vow has not been fulfilled. Avo kodshe berek habayis, delav mechusar hakrova. However, a dedication that was made to the temple treasury, where there is nothing lacking in so far as the offering on an altar, it's a dedication to the fund, to the temple fund. Afagav di omar olai, lo mechayev. Even if he happened to say olai, he is no longer responsible. And this is based on the concept of kol hecha de'isa bebegozu derachmona isa. Once you made your dedication, that is it. It then is transferred to the temple fund, and that's all that really needs to be done. If it gets stolen or lost, that doesn't change its status as being considered within the temple fund. After all, we said, Lashem ha'aretz mlo, wherever it is, it's in the domain of the Almighty. The Gemara asks, v'ha'tnan, but we have a Tanaic source that would seem to challenge this. Ha'oimer shor zu ze oila, baya ze korban. Person dedicates an ox as an ola sacrifice, or a house as a korban. Now, a house obviously is not something that's sacrificed. This is dedicated to the temple fund. And it's called korban because even things that are dedicated to Berek Abayis can be referred to by the term korban. Meis hashor nofal abayis, eino chayav b'achriyusan. In the case that a person had made his dedication by saying ze, like shor ze ola, or by ze korban, pointing to a specific item, if something happens, for example, the animal dies, the house caves in, the one who made the negation is no longer chayav, he has no obligation to make good on it. However, shor ze olai ola, by a ze olai korban, if the person had made his dedication by adding the expression olai, upon me, then meis hashor v'nofal habayis chayav l'shalem. Notice we've dashed, underlined the expression bayezelai korban. This is an example of kochei bedek habayis. He's dedicating a piece of real estate. He's dedicating a structure to the temple repair fund, to the bedek habayis. And we see v'nofal habayis chayav l'shalem. We've dashed, underlined that as well, showing that which means if the house fell in, he is obligated, he must pay, he must offer compensation. So what do we see? We see that by kochei bedek habayis as well, not like Reish Lakish answered, making a distinction between kochei mizbeach versus kochei bedek habayis. Here you see that kochei bedek habayis is treated the same way as the kochei mizbeach, and that if something happens, if it gets destroyed, he must make good on it. So the Gemara answers, Reish Lakish will answer, once again, there is still a distinction between the case I was talking about, where I indicated there was no obligation in Bedek Habayis, as opposed to this source that was just cited where there is obligation. Hani mili, when is it that we say there is an obligation to make good on it? Hecho de meis hashor v'nofal habayis. Chayav l'shalem, the less nahu, they are no longer around. That's true. Once again, the obligation arises, the obligation, the responsibility, the guarantee that one must make good on it is true in the case where the item dedicated dies, or in the case of the house, which was really our case, the house caved in, where the lesnu, it is no longer around. Aval hecho de isnahu, however, the case I was describing before about kochei bedek habayis that got stolen, they still exist. Kol hecho de isse, wherever they may be right now, but we know they are around. Bebegos de rachmona isse, dechtiv l'shem rotzum lo, they are said to be in the possession of the temple treasury. And how can that be if they have been stolen? Because they are somewhere in the world, and in the world is something that is under the control, or in the possession, so to speak, of the Almighty, as the Pasuk says, Lashem ha'aretz umloa. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice we have a new nosei mivneh heading. Maybe just to refine or to review the last point, the very last point, namely Reish Lakish, he was of the opinion, and he defended his opinion, that in the case of a bird, let us say, where a dedication was made of the bird to Kedushas Bedek Habayis, and then that bird rebelled, ran away, the rebellion of the bird, the fluttering away of the bird, does not undo the Kedushas Bedek Habayis status, and hence that could also be the case of the Mishnah when it said Mukdashim or Potter from Shluach HaKain, Mukdashim including even something was dedicated as Kedushas Bedek Habayis, it retains its Kedusha even though it already is no longer in the original owner's control. Nevertheless, there is no mitzvah of Shluach HaKain. No same mivneh that we have for this new Gemara, we feature a Roman numeral 1 and 2, and this you will notice in the Gemara, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, there is a 1 over here, and on Omid Beis, you will see the number 2, Shnei L'shoinois B'Rav Hamnuna B'Nyan Erechin. There will be two versions of Rav Hamnuna when it comes to a special type of dedication known as Erechin. Erechin is a situation where a person vows to bring his Torah value. A person's value is set in the Torah in a special parsha that deals with ages of people based on different age categories. A person is assigned a Torah value. This is in contrast with something that we refer to as market value. There is something simply called a Torah dictated value, which is regardless of what a person's actual market value is, it's a value based on the individual's age. There are different ages, and also the standard changes, or is different between the genders, male versus female. So this is called Erechin. In this case, a person, let us say, says Olai. Does the fact that a person in making an Erechin dedication, using the word Olai, does that create obligation? Is there a Chiyuv Achrayas or not? And the example would be a person had said that he wants to bring his Torah value, he wants to dedicate his Torah value to the Beis HaMikdash, set aside money, and then the money that he set aside was then stolen. Does the fact that he used the word Olai in an Erechin dedication create this sense of responsibility and obligation to make good on it even after it has been stolen? The Gemara, Omar Rav Hamnuna, Hakol Moidim Be'erchin, everyone will agree. In the case of Erechin, Afalgav the Omar Olai, even though a person may have used the word Olai, Loi Mechayev, he is not obligated. That, namely, that after he set aside the money that he dedicated to fulfill his Erechin vow, if it got stolen, he doesn't have to make good on it. My Taima. Why is that? After all, up till now, we've seen that when a person uses the word Olai, it creates a certain sense of personal responsibility and obligation to make good on the vow. Why, in this case of Erechin, is that not so? Answer, the lo mismar le bolo Olai. This kind of dedication, of Erechin, the Erechin dedication, cannot be expressed without using the word Olai. Hence, the choice of the word Olai was we should say there was no choice in this matter. He had to use the word Olai, and hence, it's not an elective choice, as is the case in other kinds of dedications, whereby if a person chooses to use the expression Olai, he is knowingly obligating himself to make good in the event that something happens to that which he dedicated. Since in the case of Erechin, since it can't be stated without the word Olai, the use of the word Olai is not an indication that he has selected and has chosen to obligate himself to offer a guarantee. And the Gemara explains what is meant by this, that it couldn't be said any other way. Heichi lemo, how else could he issue an Erechin dedication? Lemo erki, if a person would simply say erki, my Torah value, well, aman, upon whom is the obligation to bring it? He's not indicating who should bring it. He's just saying, making an empty statement, my Torah value. Lema, should he say, Erech Ploni, a person that I want to dedicate so-and-so's Torah value? Once again, so you say, so-and-so's Torah value. Aman, upon whom? He hasn't indicated who is expected to bring that. In other words, either if a person were to say simply Erki or Erech Ploni, without using the word Olai, it would have no meaning. So he has to use the word Olai. And it's based on that Rav Hamnuna concludes, according to this first version, that the Olai, since it had to be used, it's not a function of a choice that he may have had whereby he wants to obligate himself. Therefore, when a person says Erki Olai and he set aside the money, if it gets stolen, he does not thereby absorb responsibility or accept responsibility. Maskif lo Rava, we have indicated a little number one over here, and to the immediate left hand side of the more text you'll notice a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. We start here essentially two questions, two attacks on this version of Rav Hamnuna, and the long question you'll see extends till the second line from the top of Amud Beis. So point one, Maskif lo Rava. Rava, he asks, Lemo hareini be'erki, or hareini be'erech ploni, could he not have used an expression like this, where it would have been clear what his intent is in making this erech dedication, and he, at the same time, is not using the word olai. He could have said, hareini be'erki, I am in my erech, meaning I am dedicating my erech, and likewise, a person can dedicate someone else's erech, someone else's Torah value. And that expression would have been clear. And if that be the case, if he would have chosen to use the olai approach, namely erki olai, that would have created obligation. And once again, if something would happen, he would have to make good on it. The Oitanya, and furthermore, we have the following Tanaic source. This Tanaic source will show us that in the case of an erechin dedication, he must make good on it. Rabbi Nosson Omer, V'nosan es ho'erkecho bayomahu kodesh Lashem. Ma Talmud Lomar. Rashi elaborates on this piece of Gemara, which we won't elaborate on right now, but the point is the word ho'erkecho in this pasuk seems to be unnecessary if one were to understand the pasuk in its simple fashion. So that's why the Bryce is asking, what do you mean by the word ho'erkecho in this pasuk? Answer, l'fishamotzinu begdeshus umaisus. We have found when one makes a dedication of something to the Beis HaMikdash, Hekdash, or Maisrus, person sets aside his Maisr Sheni tithe, Shemishalan Moshe Bechulin, we know that there is an option in the realm of Hekdash and Maisrus to redeem or transfer the sanctity onto money. Nignivu Osha Avdu Einon Chayov Vin Bachriuson. After a person, let us say, made a pidyon, a chilul is the redemption of sanctity, removed the sanctity from an item that he had dedicated and transferred onto money, that original item becomes mundane. Sanctity having been removed from it, it returns to a state of being of a common nature, and you can use it for your own purposes because you redeemed its sanctity. Now, if something happens to the money onto which you transferred the sanctity, you don't have to worry about anything. You don't have to make good on it. Once you transfer the Kedusha off the original item, it's there for your benefit. And if something happened to those monies that absorb the Kedusha, you don't have to make good on it. That's what is meant, Einon Chayav Bachriyusan. Yohol af zekein. Would you say the same thing in the case of an erechin dedication? Namely, a person dedicated his Torah value, set aside money, and then the money got stolen. Is it also so that he is exempt from making good on it? Talmud Lomar, v'nosan es ha'erkecho v'chulei. And here, once again, that word, the pasuk with the word erkecho is mentioned. And from this we learn, chulin ad shiavo lidei gizbar. The fact that he merely set it aside doesn't involve any sanctity on those monies, and it remains chulin until it gets to the hands of the Beis HaMikdash, telling us that if a person made such a dedication, an erechin dedication, he is obligated because he hasn't fulfilled his intent until it gets to the hands of the treasurer. So what do we see from here? That in the case of erechin, he is going to be obligated. This, by the way, is to the contrary of what Rav Hamnuna had said in the first Lashon, where he said, even if you say the word olai, you are not obligated in the case of erechin. Here you see that if something happens in the case of money set aside for erechin, you do have to make good on it. Elo yitmar hochi yitmar. You'll notice we have a Roman numeral number 2, and the squiggle underlined elo yitmar is a marking that we use when we present alternative expressions, alternative answers, as we have here. This is a second lashon, an alternative approach to Rav Hamnuna. So, rather, thusly says Rav Hamnuna, Hochi itar, Omar Rav Hamnuna, Hakol Moidim Berechin. Everyone will agree in the case of Erechin, Afagav Veloi Omar Olai, even without using the word Olai, Mechayev. One is obligated. One does bear responsibility. This is an expression, this approach of Ramin is the total opposite of the first approach. Here he's saying that even without using the word olai, one does absorb responsibility. Dichtiv, v'nosan es ha'erkecho. chulin hein biyodcha. The money that you may have set aside remains unsanctified ad shiavo lidei gizbar, until it reaches the actual hands of the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash. Before going on in this new piece of Gemara, we have a topic heading on the outside margin. Drushos ala posuk ki ikore v'chulei, the psukim that feature the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, which are found in Dvorim Perichov Beis, psukim Vov and Zayin. Hamlamdim, these drushos will teach us mosai yesh or ein chiyuv Shiluach HaKein, under what circumstances there are or not Shiluach HaKein. Tanu Rabbanan, the Tanaic source begins, Ki ikore kan sipor lefonecha. Ma Talmud Lomar. What is the significance of the word yikore, which means when you chance upon? Lefi shenemar, since the Pasuk says in this same parsha, it says, Shaleach tishalach esoem vesabonim tikach loch, the word to send away is doubled. You see a double expression which we dashed underlined, Shaleach tishalach. Yochol yachsor b'horim u'gvoz k'dei shimtso kein. From the fact that the Torah emphasizes this in a double fashion, one might have thought that one has to seek out a bird's nest in mountains and hills in order to find this situation to fulfill the mitzvah. Talmud Lomar, so to this the Torah answers, ki korei b'me'uru lefonecha. When you chance upon it, in other words, it's not a type of mitzvah that you have to seek out. It's a mitzvah that one becomes obligated in only if he happens to chance upon it. Kain, the Pasuk said, kan tzipor, kan mikomakom. Kan indicates a nest even if there's only one bird in it. Tzipor, the word tzipor means tahora velo tamea, a kosher variety bird, not an unkosher variety. In other words, if one chances upon a nest of unkosher variety birds, this mitzvah does not apply. Lifonecha, that means birshus hayochid, in a private domain. Baderech, it means birshus harabim, in a public domain. Be'ilonos minayin, what about a nest found in a tree? How do we know that the mitzvah applies? Talmud Lomar b'chol eitz, it says that likewise in the Pasuk. Beboros shichun moros minayin, nests found in different kinds of pits. From where do I know that one would be obligated? Talmud Lomar oy al ha'oretz, it says, or on the ground, including pits. V'chimei achash shesofenu l'rabos kol davar, if at the end of the story we're actually including all kinds of circumstances, then lefonecha baderech lomo li, the expressions lefonecha, you'll notice we have a little arrow to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. You can align this with the previous arrow, and you'll see on that previous line where the words lefonecha were darshan to mean rishus hayochid and baderech to include public domain. But when we're, as you know, as we go on in this drasha, we notice that in all kinds of areas, one who chances upon a nest, one becomes obligated. So what is intended by, what's really intended by the words lefonecha and baderech? Answer, lomar loch, ma derech she'en kino biyodcha, af kol she'en kino biyodcha. Just like a road is, something found on a road is not at your disposal, it's not in your control, so to any circumstance like that. Mikan Omru, based on this approach, we learn Yoine Shoivach Vyoine Aliyah Vitziporim Shikonu Bitfichum Biros. Yone Shovach are birds found in coops, and Yone Aliyah birds that nest in attics. Or tziporim shekonu betfichim ubebiros, birds that made nests in these are spaces in walls. Tfichin is a place in a wall, a space, a gap in a wall. Or bebiros, these are large buildings, apartment buildings. V'avozim v'tarnegolim shekonu bepardes, avozim sometimes translated as geese, or tarnegolim, chickens that rebelled, that they were once owned, but they rebelled, and they flew away and made nests in orchards. These are all cases that they're not biyodcha, they're not under your control. Chayov b'shiluach. So all of these would be examples of things that are bound to the mitzvah of shiluach aval. Kinenu b'soch habayis. However, if a bird made a nest in your house, v'chen yone hardesios, these types of yonim, Hadesius, the Gemara will explain that expression a little bit more later. These are birds that make nests in people's houses. Poter mishiluach. Those are not similar to the intent of the word baderech, on the road, but rather they're in a house. Therefore, they are exempt from mitzvahs shiluach hakein. The Gemara will go over many of the points mentioned in this Tanaic source. Omar Mar. Point number one. We saw, and there's a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the previous star. You will see where this quote is coming from. Ma derech she'en kino biyotcha, af kol she'en kino biyotcha. We were learning from derech the idea of a nest that's not in your control. Well, ha lomali, what do I need derech to communicate that for? Miki kore nafka, ki kore prat lemezumon. Wouldn't the word ikore convey that same idea? Ikore meant something that you chance upon, to the exclusion of something that is at your disposal. So, ki kore would have accomplished what derech accomplishes. The oid lifonecha lomali. And furthermore, what do I need the lifonecha for? Rashi explains, "Vel lifonecha lomali mishum rishus hayochid de pardes." What do I need lifonecha? Which we had thought before was to talk about the to describe birds in orchards. The rishus hayochid de pardes hoil v'sofenu l'rabos esakol. Why refer to something specific like that when, after all, we're including all cases of birds that are not in your control? The Gemara answers, Ella. Now, we raised, just now, we have little numbers that we wrote in the last three lines. One, number one was referring, was associated with the derech word, and the number two with the lefanecha. So the Gemara answers, answering first the lefonecha, which we call two, and then derech, which we'll call one. Ela lefonecha, lasuye, shehoyu lefonecha umardu. The lefonecha word in the pasuk tells me to include in the shiluach hakein obligation cases of birds that were once yours and then fluttered away, rebelled. The rebellion will enable the mitzvah shiluach hakein to take hold. Baderech, That's Kid Rav Yehuda Marav. That's for his teaching. The Omer Rav Yehuda Marav, Motzo Kein Bayam, Chayav B'Shiluach. If a person found a nest in a tree that had been washed away, and you find it on the high seas, you find it in the water, a floating tree with a nest in it, Chayav B'Shiluach, you'll be obligated to do the Shiluach HaKein, even in such a case. Shenemar ko amar Hashem hanosein bayam derech. In this pasuk you see that the term derech applies to the sea as well. Hence, the word lifonech, the word derech in the pasuk, is coming to include this rather unusual case. Elo me'ato, based on this analysis, motzo kein bashomayim. If you were to find, let us say, a bird that was flying in the sky with a nest attached to it, are you going to tell me that would also be a situation of chiyuv shiluach hakein dichtiv derech nesher bashamayim? You see the word derech, and you see shamayim. Hochi nami demechayim v'shiluach hakein. Under these circumstances too, would you say that there is a mitzvah of shiluach hakein? That you see from here that, and if you're telling us just like by the sea, there is a mitzvah shiluach because the sea is called derech. Well, shamayim is also called derech. The Gemara answers, there's a difference. In the case of Shomayim, the heavens, derech nesher ikri, derech stamo lo ikri. The term for Shomayim is derech nesher. It's a compound expression. The Torah, when talking about the obligation of Shiluach HaKein, it talks about derech alone, derech stamo, not in a compound form, so that it would be inaccurate to refer to Shomayim as simple derech based on this pasuk. Question. Omri le papunoi l'rav matona. Papunoi, asks Rav Matona, Motzo kein b'roisha shel adam mahu. Let us say a person found a nest on someone's head. What would one say then? Is there a mitzvah shuach hakein under such circumstances? Omar lehu, so Rav Matona answers, v'adomo al roishoi. Rashi explains, across from here, v'adomo al roisho, afo pishoya b'roisho, even though it's on his head, lo avdo es shmo. You have dirt on someone's head, it's still called adoma, even though it's on the person's head. Shma mino adom gufe adomahu. If it's on a person's head and it's still referred to as adoma, it must be that the person is also referred to as adoma. So that it's just a continuum, so to speak, from the top of his head to the very ground. The person himself being an extension of adoma. Midolo avdo es shmo. From the fact that, how do I know to conclude that a person also is called Adama? From the fact that that which is on his head is called Adama, the lokarya afar, it's not referred to by a more common expression or an equally common expression, afar, which is a word referring to dirt. So why is it that when it's on the person's head, is it called Adama and not afar? So that shows us that it's still considered attached to the ground, and that the person himself is simply an extension of the ground. V'hashtonami al-horetz karino bay, and by virtue of that, the nest found on his head is still considered al-horetz, it's still considered on the ground, and therefore there would be an obligation of shiluach hakein. This gives rise to a series of additional questions that Papunoi poses to Rav Matana, and we've used numberings to indicate each question, starting with the Motzah Kein Barosha, but now we lapse into some other questions. There's a common theme. We have a little no say heading that accompanies this in the outside margin, and we've written Heichon Remuzim Batura, where is it mentioned? Where are they mentioned in the Torah? Moshe, Haman, Esther, Mordechai, Lifnei, Shebol, Olam. Before these figures came to the world, where is there a hint to them in the Torah? Moshe mina Torah minayin. Where is a reference, a hint to Moshe Rabbeinu before he ever came to be? The pasuk says in Sefer Bereishis, it says Bishagam hu basar. In that pasuk, it also mentions v'hoyu yomov me'ov esrim shana. This pasuk is describing mankind, and it says, and he will live to 120. The word bishagam, if you take the numerical value of that word, first of all, you see mem and shin in that word, which you find by Moshe Rabbeinu as well. In addition, in this word, you see beis and gimel. The numerical value of beis and gimel is 2 and 3, equaling 5. The difference between Bishagam and the word Moshe is, in the case of Moshe, you have the letter He. Here, you have the letters Beis and Gimel. The numerical value of the letter He is also 5. So Bishagam has the same value, numerical value, as Moshe Rabbeinu. And being that it says over here that he will live to 120, in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu himself did live to 120 years of age. So here you have a hint to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah, way before he ever came to be. Haman mina Torah minayin. Haman, meaning the story of Haman and his eventual hanging on the tree, as is featured in the Purim story. From where do we see a remez to that in the Torah? The pasuk says Hamin ha'etz. Hamin ha'etz is a reference to the story in Parshas Bereishis with the Gan Eden, Adam and Chava, and it says Hamin ha'etz. And the word hamin also can be with a vowel change. You have homon. And the word eitz is a tree. And we know that homon was eventually hung in a tree. Esther minatora minayin. Esther, where is there a reference to Esther in the Torah? Specifically, the word Hester, Esther, similar to the word Hester, Hester meaning something hidden, where the Kodesh Baruch Hu operates, controls the world, but in a hidden fashion. In other words, world events or occurrences can be, so to speak, explained away through natural causes without a clear divine revelation, and yet he is the one controlling things. Where is this concept referred to in the Torah? It should be emphasized that the Purim story As many of you may know, the name of the Almighty doesn't appear in the entire Megillas Esther, which serves as a sign that the Megillas Esther could be, though quite mistakenly, could be read as a book of natural occurring events without the divine hand controlling the matter. Where is this phenomenon reflected in the Torah? The pasuk says, "Va'anochi haster astir." I will that day. And it's referring to the day of destruction, of the day of Churban Habayis, the day the Kodesh Baruch Hu brings retribution to the world. And he says, "I will hide my face. I will hide myself, and allow people to think that the world is running through natural events." But it's upon us, it's our obligation really to discover the hand of the Almighty in everything. And number five, Mordechai min HaTorah minayin. The question here is a reference to where do we see a hint to the greatness of Mordechai already in the Torah itself. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, in the context of the spices used for the Keturis of the Beis HaMikdash, it says, Mor Dror. And together with that, the pasuk says, "Ve'ato kach lecho besomim roish mor dror." U'metargaminon, the targum of mor dror is mira dichya. These words are very similar to Mordechai. If you look at the words carefully, you can see a hint to Mordechai. And the pasuk, as we had read when we've jotted this on the side of our Gemara, it says in this pasuk, "Besomim roish," roish meaning the head. There you see an indication or a hint to Mordechai becoming the head, becoming the great leader that he was. Ve'ezu she'eno mezuman v'chulei. Gemara here will discuss the term Yoinei Hadarsios, Rabbi Chiyo v'Rabbi Shimon, Chad Toni, one has as his version the word Hadarsios, v'Chad Toni Hardesios. With our markings, we've emphasized the point of difference. You can see it's basically the same word, just the Dalid and the Reish are switched around. Man detoni har desios, the one who learns a bird described as yoinei har desios, which are exempt from shiluach hakein, is al shem hurdus. Har desios is a reference to hurdus. Hurdus was a king who lived during the second Beis HaMikdash period. He was in effect a slave that had rebelled from his Hashmonoim masters, and he took over the kingdom. His name was Hordus, in English referred to as Herod, and he was the first one. He was the one who popularized, or the first one to start raising these kinds of birds. So they are called Yonei Hardesios, Umandetani Hadarsios, Al Shem Mekomon. This is a reference to where they come from. Omar Rav Kahana, Ledidi Chazion. Rav Kahana, who lived many years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, he says, "I saw these birds. I saw these Yonei Hardesios, the Kaimon Shitzar Dori, and I saw them in 16 Shitzar, 16 Dori rows of these birds." These are birds that Rav Kahana says remained. They were the subsequent generations of those birds that Hurdus had raised. These were their offspring many generations later, and I saw them, and there were 16 rows of them. But passe mila, each row was a mil wide. A mil is approximately a kilometer in width, approximately say 2/3 of a mile, roughly speaking. The havikora kiri kiri. And the noise that these birds were making, they were calling out, they were saying a word. Kiri, kiri means master. They were, we'll say, proclaiming their original king Herod, the master. Havechad minayu delo havekori kiri kiri. It was one bird that wasn't cooperating. He wasn't calling that. He wasn't saying those words. Omro lo chaverta. So one of the other birds said to this bird, Suma, fool. Suma literally means blind, means in this case a shoita, a fool. Amri kiri kiri, you should say like the rest of us. Omra, so this rebellious bird said back, Suma, you are a fool. Amri kiri biri, our master is really a slave. And we gave the background to that before, that Herod really was not from royal descent, he himself was a slave. Asua v'shachtua, the servants that were left from the Hurdus dynasty, came and slaughtered that bird. Omar Vashi, Omar Li Rab Chanina Milin. Ravashi says that that Rabbi Chanina said that it was an empty tale. Milin Salkadaito, how could you say it's an empty tale? After all, Rav Kahana was a great man, and he was telling us this story. He was telling us that he saw it. So how can you say that it never happened? Elo Emo, rather, what Ravashi was told was b'milin, that birds don't speak. If Rav Kahana saw or heard birds speaking, it must have been through some form of black magic. Oif tome poter mila shaleach. Mino hani mili. From where do we know that an oif tome is exempt from this obligation? Namely, that one who chances upon a nest of an unkosher variety bird, he is exempt from performing this mitzvah. Omar b'Yitzchok, the Omar Kro, the posuk in the Torah referring to Shiluach HaKain says, Ki yikore kan tzipor lefonecha. We've dashed on the line the word tzipor, because this is going to be the emphasis of our discussion. The word oif, which is not found over here, mashma bon bein tor bein tome. The term oif will include both kosher variety and unkosher variety birds. However, tzipor, Tor ashkechon de ikrit tzipor, tome lo ashkechon de ikrit tzipor. The term tzipor we find only in reference to kosher variety birds and not in the context of unkosher variety birds. So since the pasuk says ki korei kan tzipor lefanecha, we understand that the Torah is referring to a kosher variety bird. Before going any further, we have noted this as our topic heading on the outside margin, the nosei, tzipor mashma dafka tor velo tome. The term tzipor indicates only kosher variety to the exclusion of unkosher variety birds. Under our mivne heading, we feature a house shape. This will be seen in the Gemara, quite a few of these shapes, representing a series of kushyos al hanal, challenges, questions on this principle that Rav Yitzchak is teaching us. So in today's shiur, we will start this list of questions, realizing that it continues on to Daf Kuf Mem as well, but as in the context of today's shiur, we will not complete the series of questions. So let us begin. Toshma, the pasuk in Sefer Devarim, teaches concerning the prohibition of making different forms, idolatrous forms. The pasuk says, "Tavnis kol tzipor kanof." The form of any tzipor kanof, and you see the word tzipor, my love. Is it not so that tzipor equals bein tor bein tome, and the word kanof equals chagovim? Chagovim are insects or locusts. For our purposes, focusing on the markings, we have dashed underlined the key points. You see the word tzipor, and you see bein tomei, showing us that the word tzipor is a term referring to birds, inclusive of unkosher variety birds as well. The Gemara says, no, that's not the understanding of the posuk. Rather, tzipor equals tahor. Kanof, it refers to tomei v'chagovim. So it's true that Torah is forbidding the making of all forms of creatures as idols. But specifically, the term tzipor refers to kosher variety birds. As far as the prohibition of making the forms of unkosher variety birds and locusts, that's included in the term konof, which literally has to do with winged creatures. Toshma, hachayo v'chol behemo remes v'tzipor konof. This pasuk in Tehillim is referring to the songs of praise that all creatures recite. And in the list of creatures, you see Vitzipor as well. My lav, Tzipor. Is it not so that the word Tzipor refers to the singing of praises of birds, Baintor, Baintome? The Kanof equals Chagovim, and Kanof is a reference to the locusts. Once again, without getting into the depths of the what the Pasuk is talking about, after all, this concept of a creature singing praise of the Almighty is a rather lofty concept, but for our immediate purposes, you can see we've dashed underlined Tzipor and Bein Tomei, representing a problem, a kasha on Rav Yitzchok. The Gemara answers Loi, Tzipor equals Tahar. The word Tzipor is restricted to the kosher variety birds. Kanof, that is a reference to Tomei v'Chagovim. Toshma, we try again, raising a posuk from, it says, Kol Tzipor, Kol Kanof. My lav, is it not so kidemakshinon, like we asked, once again, that the word sipor would be inclusive of kosher and unkosher variety as well, representing a question on Rav Yitzchok. The Gemara says, lo, kidemeshaninon, rather as we answered, and we've seen this already several times, sipor is reserved or specifically Torah varieties, and konof in this pasuk refers to the unkosher variety birds. Toshma, V'ato ben Adam emor l'tzipor kol kanof. My lav, is it not so, kide akshinon, as we asked? Lo, kide shaninon, as we answered. As you can see, the Gemara is raising different psukim, attempting to present a kashan Rabbi Yitzchok, but answering as we have answered. With this, we find ourselves in the middle of a series of questions, but at this point, and with this, we conclude our shiur for today.